2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It is KSL's Unrivaled.
Go the distance.
Alex Keery, the voice of the...
If you build it, they will come.
The voice of the ghost from Field of Dreams also joining us on the program. Scott Mitchell.
I love Field of Dreams.
Oh, it's a great show.
It's one of those I can watch over and over.
It's one of those that wherever you pick it up where it's at, yeah. You have to watch the rest.
I'm jealous of you that you've actually been there.
My claim to fame is I not just was there, I stole two...
Stole two bases?
No, I definitely would have been thrown out even
Did
by
you go
the,
head first into home?
Even by the ghost. No, I stole some corn from the Field of Dreams. Come on, there's no problem. I've got it. It's there in my house. I'm going to put it on a mantle or something. I'm not kidding. I did it, and I'm not ashamed to say it. The guy was like, I learned a lot about corn that day. It's like a whole thing. I learned a lot about baseball, a lot about myself, Scotty. Welcome on into KSL's Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us. Joining us on the program, Sean O'Connell, who is not only a connoisseur of sports movies, but he wears many, many hats, among which, of course, he had a career as an MMA fighter, did some time in the UFC. Is that how you say it, Sean? You did time in the UFC?
That's probably the right way to say it when you're low on the card like myself. If you're a main event fighter, you can say something cooler, but if you're just someone on the undercard, yeah, you served your time.
You did your time there. Also on SiriusXM, it talks about the Pac-12. Give us the station you guys are on SiriusXM so people can listen in.
It's the Pac-12 Network on channel 373. They have a conference network on SiriusXM for each of the Power 5 conferences, and I'm lucky enough to do the afternoon show with Jeff Schwartz, who is and a big NFL guy, former
right.
offensive lineman at the University of Oregon. So we do the afternoon drive show here in Salt Lake. It's on 4 to 7 p.m. But right now, like everyone else, we're affected by the whole COVID thing.
Right, so sure.
It's just a one-hour podcast every day.
Hey, that's what we do, too. We do the one-hour gig. So
among
all the things that you guys have been talking about over the last few days, let's start with the UFC and what they did over the weekend. Your tweets that you sent out were very positive in the sense of, man, they put this thing together. They had this vision of how they're going to do it. And despite all the criticism, Dana White said, I kind of don't care. We're going to get on TV somehow. And however we can do it with no fans in there and the most minimal amount of or the least amount of people we can get in this arena. And they were able to pull it off. Do you think watching it, did you think, OK, yeah, they stayed within the bounds of kind of some regulations there?
For the most part, I guess they tried. There were some situations like the referees weren't wearing masks
right
inside the cage, but why would you, I guess, if you were the referee who'd been tested, you know, six times already that week.
Right.
And then, you know, fighters obviously are real up close and personal when they're beating each other up. The commentary team, they actually put the commentary team at three different tables on, you know, kind of different sides of the octagon. But then they still had to do stand-ups on camera, and they were standing, you know, elbow to elbow. So,
right.
They don't have a social distancing camera angle
well,
yet.
Joe Rogan was different. Basically like hugging guys. It looked like, you know, giving fives out and everything.
Joe Rogan took the stance of like, look, I've been healthy this whole time. I've been socially isolated this whole time.
Right.
And then obviously they went down, they're doing these things in Jacksonville, and the UFC was testing everybody when they arrived, taking their temperature, testing them every day since. They're doing four events in 2 weeks, three events this week, And so everyone's just kind of staying in the same hotel. So they test him every day. And, yeah, he was like, I'm healthy. And the guys around me are supposed to be healthy because they're being tested. So why should I? Yeah, but why should I avoid touching them?
Joe Rogan, I mean, he's not going to get sick anyways. I mean, he's just too above any of that.
Sure.
So right. Alex and I had a conversation the other day about no fans. And does that impact, because it, you know, it's a very intimate setting. I'm sure you've been in it. You know, how much impact do you think it has on the fighters when there aren't any fans in the stands? And do you think that it's a sport that can translate to, because I know – is it better on TV than it actually is live?
So, I mean, I love fights live, but you can make an easy argument that fights are actually better on TV because unobstructed views, you get great camera angles, you get better, you know, replay, you get insightful commentary from the aforementioned Joe Rogan and then usually Daniel Cormier or right. somebody else who's, you know, a Hall of Fame caliber fighter. So, I mean, you can make an easy argument that really every sport is getting better on TV than it is live. But as far as it affecting the fighters, that is the most interesting question because I have like three angles I approach that from. If you're a fighter who's only there for the fans and for the money, you're not really a fighter. If you're not able to perform, you know, in an empty arena or in no arena at all in the gym when it's just you and a couple of your buddies, that's when you're really a fighter. But some people do feed off the crowd. Everyone arguably feeds off the crowd. And maybe it makes the sport better when you can hear not only the punch landing, but the reaction to the punch landing and things like that. A guy in the main event fight, Justin Gaethje, put on the best performance of his entire career. And he's had a long and successful career. But he put on the cleanest, best, most dominant performance of his entire career, and maybe he did that because the crowd makes him nervous, and there wasn't a crowd. So,
yeah.
So who knows, right? I mean, it affects everyone else differently, I suppose.
Yeah, that was the other takeaway was you have this main event fight that everybody's looking at, and I'm going, these poor main event guys, they've got to really be made of something strong here because they're interrupting their regular training, all the regular stuff that they do with all these tests. You know, it's just everything is out of normal. Everything's out of the norm. You can't do anything, quote unquote, normally. I would suppose that in the gym, it would feel, I mean, if these guys are, it would just feel like a massive sparring event with kind of nobody around in terms of the sound you're used to. I mean, and these guys get in a zone for fighting anyway, I feel like. But going from that to the actual part of what we could learn from the UFC and what we could learn kind of as a, you know, canary in the coal mine type situation with the UFC this weekend, how do the rest of the sports kind of add up? Do they add up the same way where we go, hey, you have guys performing at this massively high level and TV's the way that we want to enjoy it anyway?
You know, I think that individual sports are the ones that are going to be able to come back easiest, quickest, and most seamlessly because made for TV with individual sports is just as good, if not better, than the actual, you know, arena experience. Things like tennis. We watch Wimbledon on TV, and it's a great product. Now, I'm sure it's lovely to go and have strawberries and cream at Wimbledon and sit there in the sun.
As long as you lift your pinky.
Yeah, you gotta.
As long as you have your pinky up, you're okay. Yes.
Put me in the royal box.
I mean, golf. I have never stood in a gallery at a golf major or anything like that, but
well, you haven't lived, just so you know.
Okay, hold on.
No,
see, I've gone down to not. Well, I wouldn't. I've never been to a major, but I will say
you've been to a minor.
I've been to a PGA. I'm telling you, the PGA tour. I've been on a PGA tour, and it was kind of a miserable day. Now it was the Phoenix Open.
Oh my goodness!
I'm not kidding. Yeah. It was the Waste Management Open. It's very different from the Masters, I guess.
You're walking around having dudes shushing you and stuff. No, thank you, all right? If I'm watching the Masters on my couch, my fridge is right there. I can yell at whoever
miss
I
it.
Want to yell at.
Miss it, Noonan. So, miss it. Miss it.
But here's the thing. Team sports, I think, are a different model. For me, especially basketball, and I've said this on the air before, but maybe the greatest thing in the sports viewing experience, in the sports arena viewing experience, is when you're sitting there and a basketball game is, you know, 1-point margin, 2-point margin or whatever, and a shot goes up that might determine the game, and there's that collective hush, and then based on whether the shot goes in or out, there's the collective reaction.
Right, the explosion.
20,000 people all doing the same thing at the same time, subconsciously, unconsciously. We all hold our breath, and then we exhale it, either in dismay or in celebration, right? And that is something that's so, so, so special, and even comes through on TV about basketball specifically. So I don't know if basketball would be as good in empty arenas. Fights are great in empty arenas because you can hear the punches and kicks landing in a way that you can't when there's fans there screaming over the top of it. But basketball, I don't want to hear the sneaker squeaks and the ball hitting the floor as much as I want to hear the crowd reacting.
Well, Sean O'Connell joins us here on KSL's Unrivaled. OC, the real OC Sports is his Twitter handle. We're going to take a quick break here. And Sean, when we come back, I want to dive in a little bit to the Pac-12 side of things that you cover as well, kind of the suppositions and the opining that we are all doing right now in the world of sports when it comes to what would a season look like if. And we have a lot of that going on this week, so stay with us. More to go on KSL's Unrivaled, KSL News Radio. All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Sean O'Connell joins us on the program right now.
You know, Alex,
what do you got?
I would imagine, you know, we've talked about like not having fans and not being pumped up and motivated.
Yeah,
I imagine in a UFC fight, you just had to get hit once. Like it would just go, yeah, I don't care. I don't care anymore that there are no fans here. I just got my nose broken. You know, I'm into this. I am into this.
I can't remember which fight it was, but one dude's eye was completely closed, OC, and I was like, it was probably the most swollen eye I've ever seen. And you've seen your fair share of swollen eyes, but I remember just seeing, and he thought he won the fight. You know, like, you know, they're sitting there waiting for the decision. He ended up losing the fight, and he's like, "What?" You know, because you got to kind of sell yourself when you're standing next to the referee there. But I don't care for Ultimate Fighting. I don't care for MMA on TV as much. I mean, I think when I was in college, we did the pay per view thing. It was mostly just a social event and got together. I enjoy boxing. I see the draw of, you know, buying that Fury Wilder fight, you know, and going and hanging out with my buddies and watching those fights. I like it. But I mean, there's a chance of jumping into the mainstream and getting a group of fans you're usually not used to seeing. I mean, that was the idea, I'm sure, of getting it going this quickly as they did this weekend. But now we have to start thinking about the big mainstream sport. And in our country, it's football. And we start to think about what the fall is going to look like. And Sean, of course, the Pac-12 talked about this week already, and Clay Helton confirmed that they had discussed the possibility of an 11-game schedule where all teams in the Pac-12 play each other once, and no non-conference games would be played, and that is something that appeals to Scott because he feels like that's an amazing thing. They should do that every year. Your thoughts of what you guys have talked about on the subject.
You know, in a vacuum, I love that idea. If it wasn't something that was forced upon us by a pandemic, I would be all for it and be like, yeah, let's do this. It's the best solution, maybe, if we get to late July or August and they're like, look, the South hasn't been quarantining at all. We cannot have USC play Alabama because it's putting everybody at too great a risk. So I love the idea of just that being a plan B, a workable solution. And there's a lot of intrigue to it. It wouldn't feel to me like we were getting too much of a compromised season. We'd be getting something unique, something that we haven't seen before since the Pac-12 was created. We haven't seen a year where Utah had to play all 11 opponents. And obviously, the pecking order gets established very firmly if everybody plays everybody. So I don't hate it. I don't know how much I love it. But if that's what we get, and that's the only way we get football back, I'll take it.
We'll take whatever, like whatever they give us.
I liked it because it's comparing apples to apples when you determine a champion. And where's you know, so everyone's playing exactly the same number of teams and the same teams throughout the year. Of course, to me, the drawback is that's a serious schedule. I mean, 11 Power 5 teams in your schedule, that's tough for anyone. And I don't think you can expect people to say, yeah, you're going to go undefeated with that kind of schedule unless you're just this super dominant team. Maybe LSU last year might have done that. They may have, but I think, you know, if every conference was to do this, I think it'd be hard. Well, you couldn't do it in the Big Ten or the SEC. You know, they have too many teams, but you could. I don't know how you would figure all that out. But the other drawback to me are these rivalries.
And it's the USC outside, going to Notre Dame the, and yeah, missing yeah, yeah. kind of that, because that's a big game, no matter what. And you just hate for me, I just hate to lose that game.
Yeah, I'd hate to see some of the non-conference games we get this year in the Pac-12. USC Alabama, USC
yeah.
Notre Dame, mm-hmm. Ohio State's coming to Oregon. Which, look, if Ohio State comes to Autzen Stadium and Oregon's got to play the Buckeyes with no fans at Autzen Stadium. And then on the return trip in 2021,
it's 104,000 104,000 people at the horseshoe.
How messed up is that?
He's like, I want a refund on that first game. We're only going to pay you half of what the contract said.
Wouldn't that be terrible?
But it's the same thing where we go, but we'll take what we can get. This year, there are no rules. We don't. Yep. So when everybody comes to you and goes, yeah. But that's not going to happen. And you go, well, what we're not talking about is a long-term solution. They're not saying the Pac-12 is going to go to an 11-game schedule, because that doesn't work for the TV. The people who schedule things on TV, it doesn't work for them, because they can have the Alabama-USC games. They can have the Oregon-Ohio States. The BYU-Utah game at the front end of the schedule is an amazing game at the front end of the year. We love that.
You know what happens, though, is you get a lot of intriguing matchups that have conference implications as the season goes on. You know, you see maybe there's two or three or four teams that are undefeated or with one loss or whatever, and you, as the season winds down, as you get closer to the end of it, you start to recognize, well, you know, this matchup maybe you know, I don't know, Arizona State and Washington State yeah. may become a bigger game.
Here's my vote,
because it has some impact.
Here's my vote. All the FCS teams that the SEC teams were going to play, make that BYU schedule now. All those FCS teams. Because now teams that are independent, like BYU, are going to try to figure it out. And good luck not having like a home and home with New Mexico State if they're not going to have a schedule where Power 5 conferences
are going
to be
part of it. What's wrong with New Mexico State and home and home? What's wrong with that?
You mean stop doing that. Don't do that face to me. So, Sean, when you look at it long-term, how this works out, I mean, obviously we can't guess too much on this thing, but if there was the idea of having to push maybe a few weeks into the normal schedule, could college football be as nimble to be able to pull that off?
I don't know how. I mean, these games, we're scheduling matchups into 2027,
yeah.
2032,
yep.
right? How are you going to expect these, you know, these schools, these universities that have 105 players on the team, you know, however many of those guys are dressing and traveling, I guess, is different. You've got 40 personnel besides, you know, coaches and equipment and trainers and all that stuff. How are you going to completely pivot on 2-3-4 weeks notice if we find out in August, look, the Western United States is safe for people to travel in, but the Southeast and the
and New York, yeah, sure.
You know, I don't know how you're going to get college football to pivot. I think it's great that the Pac-12 is weighing their options and they're saying, look, if we have to do it where it's just us, you know, keep everybody else out, we're just playing that 11-game schedule, better than nothing. Because without college football, there's a lot of universities whose athletic departments will evaporate. There's a lot of schools out there who will not have softball and volleyball and gymnastics and anything else if they don't get even one football season.
Right.
So we have to do whatever we can to play.
You know, well, and there was
could they get rid of soccer?
Scott,
and I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. I don't like soccer. What am I supposed to apologize for that? I don't like it. I just don't like it.
What am I supposed to do? Apologize? Hey, turn into the godfather of football program.
All I know is I do not. I hope they go to 11 conference games, because then I don't have to go to Laramie, Wyoming. And so if that's all that comes out of this, and I know it's completely selfish on my part, there's no rational thought to it, but I don't have to go to Laramie because I don't want to go to Laramie.
This year, things are going to change. It's going to be totally different, and that's the way we have to look at it, is that this year there are no rules. To do whatever you can to make something happen, and I think that's all you can expect. I think, Sean, when it comes to like all these teams who are trying to figure something out, I've seen headlines already of smaller programs eliminating their football program, things like that. I don't think you're going to see that. When you do start to see something creeping into the FBS level like that, a bad team going down to Division II or whatever it might be so that they can kind of stay afloat, that's when I think people are going to really take it seriously on this.
Yeah, this whole crisis is going to be the thing that helps push an expanded playoff.
Right.
It's going to be the team that helps to push maybe a schism, some sort of separation between Power 5 and Group of 5. Because Power 5, it can handle, you know, altering their schedule and changing some games and only playing in conference. But all those FBS schools, all those FCS schools that count on the $1.5 million payday from Alabama just so they can buy the guys new helmets, what are they going to do if all of a sudden Bama says, no, we're only playing SEC teams this year?
Right.
What is BYU going to do if everyone's like only playing a conference schedule?
Oh, my goodness.
You know?
BYU's going to focus on volleyball.
No, they'll have the most wins they've had in program history in a while. I guarantee it. If they have to play all independents, you know Notre Dame's not going to show up. And so it's going to be a bad list. It's going to be a bad list of teams, and they better beat the heck out of all those guys. I mean, it's like when you're
them and Army, Furman.
Yes, yeah, okay. Furman.
Furman plays eight-man football, but it's okay.
I used to play against Furman like in NCAA football on the Xbox. I'd be like, you better watch out. Better watch out. Here comes the University of Washington against Furman. All right. OC, thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it. The Pac-12 Network on the Sirius XM Radio. You can catch him. Download the podcast and take a listen, just like you're doing during all this. Everybody's got interesting thoughts as to how this thing's going to continue. So, Sean, thanks for hanging out, man. We'll talk to you again later.
I was hoping you were going to ask me about Field of Dreams, but we'll get to that another day.
Oh, my goodness. We will have to
I've been there. You and I have both been there. Scott's the odd man out.
Did you steal corn?
Steal corn like I did?
I stole a base, figuratively. Not literally, but I did run the bases.
Everybody has a catch. You got to go there and have a catch with whoever's there with you, and then you got to run the bases.
I was like 9.
Oh, this was a long time ago. All right. Sean, thanks for hanging out, man. We'll talk to you again. We'll be right back. More to go. News, traffic, and weather right now on KSL News Radio. Stay with us on KSL.
KSL's unrivaled. The teams you live for. The sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome on in. It's KSL's unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Scotty Mitchell, you hear me on your end? Are you everything okay?
I hear you loud and clear.
That's good.
Yes, I'm here.
Are you wearing a mask while we're doing this? That make me feel a lot better. I don't want to get anything through a microphone or anything.
What would you like me to have, a mask on or off? I do not have a mask on right now.
Oh! Can you get it through electronics, like over a few miles?
I think it's possible, actually.
They haven't disproved it, so...
Well, it sends a wave, and that wave has to have something in it. So maybe it has, I don't know.
They told me that I don't have to be in the studio wearing it. So,
okay.
So here's the deal. We're going to jump in on the topic here, and I'm just going to play this audio, and I want you to react to it. This is, let me see here. This is Dan Graziano from ESPN, and he's throwing a bold prediction out, because that's the thing we do now when we're bored. We go, I'm going to give a bold prediction, and this one certainly is bold. Take a listen.
Will win more Super Bowls with the Packers than Aaron Rodgers will end up winning. And that's, remember, this is Aaron Rodgers has one. So unless he wins one of the next, you know, two or three, all Jordan Love has to do is win two to make this prediction come true. And, you know, it's supposed to be bold, right? I didn't want to be like, oh, so-and-so will be the leading rookie running back. You know, let's be bold. So, and I thought, what if the Packers, who draft very well, who over the past couple of decades have done as much winning and as much making the playoffs as any team in the league, what if they were right about this guy? What if the Jordan Love pick actually turns out to have been a really smart pick, the way once upon a time the Aaron Rodgers pick was?
So this is kind of a mantra that we do on our show here, bold and stupid.
Bold and stupid.
This would be a bold and stupid thing to do.
We kind of like it, though. That's the way I like it, though. No, it's like going out there. Well, and I tried to think, how would that be possible?
When we – so I was not a big Jordan Love fan.
Right.
Then you go,
Dude, if you watched him, like his sophomore year, he was amazing. He was like, and I was like, yeah,
what'd
okay.
you make me sound like that for?
Sometimes, sometimes that's how it comes out.
What do you mean? All right, so I said that, and then
just like that.
But then when ended up happening,
and then I
my
start,
scouting skills were good.
We're legit. So I got legit skills. So as I watched him, he has it's not what he did, but the guy has some foundational things that are good. Just throwing the ball, can make all the throws. He's athletic. He could fit well into a lot of the systems that seem to be being implemented into the pros. And he's been drafted by the Packers, so they love him. Right, they want to be smart. They want to be right. So they're going to give this guy every opportunity to succeed.
When they say that they draft well, are they saying that like
doesn't that's like whatever. That's not a reason why you should say he's gonna be this guy. The reason is you've got an organization that's really committed to him. They're not committed to Aaron Rodgers. Like he's from an old regime. He's kind of at the end of his time, but Jordan Love isn't. And with the way technology is, the way the game is, a guy can play for 20 years. So in a 20-year period of time, if that's how long he plays, and he will he win two Super Bowls? There's a real likelihood that could happen. And it's a little bit of a lame pick because, you know, Aaron Rodgers has only won one. And so I, you know, that, you know, if he says, well, he's going to win more Super Bowls than Ben Roethlisberger or maybe someone who's, you know, Eli Manning, who's won a couple, maybe that's a little bit more of a stretch. I think what they're saying is Aaron Rodgers was a good player and Jordan Love, who everyone thinks, you know, who the heck is this guy, could ultimately end up being a better player.
Did this feel like a little bit of a... It felt like it was more of a diss on like the Aaron Rodgers who he's become now, which is kind of like not real friendly to media, not real friendly to anybody, kind of a grumpy old dude who is a really good quarterback still, but kind of comes across as this lone wolf thing, even though he's dating, what's her name?
Danica Patrick.
And so he comes across as this like, I don't need anybody kind of thing. And I think he's falling out of favor with the media in general, I think. And so people make these predictions based on, yeah, we could see him moving on. And, hey, why not this Jordan Love guy doing well? Because I know that for all the things we saw in Jordan Love, to say that he's going to – look, when Graziano said, all he has to do is win two more Super Bowls, oh, is that all? How many did Dan Marino win? Zero. And that guy deserved – of all the people in the NFL that were good quarterbacks that should have won a Super Bowl championship – Dan Marino was the guy.
So Brett Favre said two things. One, he said Dan Marino's best quarterback ever, and if you don't say that, you're lying. As far as just pure thrower quarterback, no one was better, and I would agree with that. He also said Aaron Rodgers' job is not to be a mentor for Jordan Love, but that's what he's going to do. Jordan Love is of all the quarterbacks that were drafted this year, Jordan Love's in the very best position. He's going to a good football team, a team that likes him.
Behind the most experienced quarterback.
And he's going to watch one of the best of all time prepare, going to watch how he practices, going to watch how he is in meetings. He's going to watch his demeanor. How does he handle game days? He's going to see all that. And just so you know, it's going to rub off.
That makes a difference.
It makes a huge difference.
Did you copy stuff off of Dan Marino?
Absolutely. When I came in to play, Alex, it was like – it was seamless. I mean, you think about when Aaron Rodgers came in for Brett Favre, like it wasn't this massive, oh, my goodness, learning curve. You know, he had been tutored. And I guarantee you Brett Favre didn't sit there and say, hey, kid, let me show you how to – no one does that. That never happens. But you just sit and watch and observe. And if you're, you know, if you're awake and somewhat literate, a lot of things are going to rub off. You're going to go – oh,
there's a reason he's the best. Yeah, yeah.
And you go, oh, and you like when a coach gets up on a chalkboard, you're Joe Burrow in with the Bengals, and he goes, okay, Joe, when you go out there and play, here's what the play is. And when Jordan Love goes out, he says, here's what the play is. Here's how Aaron Rodgers is running this play. This is what it looks like. This is how you see this. It is massively different than Joe Burrow going out there and never seeing the play live. He just has to experience it for the first time. And when he does, you know, he kind of like has a bodily fluid problem. and it's the learning curve, and what you have to go through is brutal. Troy Aikman, who is a Hall of Famer, was terrible when he first started.
1-15, 1988.
Was so bad. And so when you have someone to show you the way, it is so much better than if you just have to kind of figure it out the painful way. And it will be an immense blessing to Jordan Love, and it very possibly could be a way for him to end up going out and winning Super Bowls.
Well, the other thing is this. The guy, he's not going to a slouch organization either. The organization has their stuff together. Yeah. On top of the fact that he's going to be learning behind one of the best quarterbacks that the league has right now, and that even that organization has had.
Had one D1 offer, and here was this kid, and he's just gone like this. And you don't know what his potential is. I mean he could be, you know, just at the beginning of being a really, really good player or not. I don't know.
Let's take the break here. We'll come back. We've got our buy or sell segment. That segment brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They make junk disappear. Stay right here with us. More to go on KSL's Unrivaled. You know what that music means. It's the end of KSL's Unrivaled's program this evening. And, yes, this is when we will be bidding adieu with our buy or sell segment, Free Online Trading Academy, brought to you by Online Trading Academy, a free 3-hour workshop. TradingAcademy.com. It's TradingAcademy.com. Scott, explain to the people what we do with buy or sell.
Well, if we like something, we buy it. And it's something related to sports. And hopefully it will prosper and we make money. If we don't like it, we sell it, and hopefully we get rid of it so we don't lose money. So things we buy, things we don't.
I heard an interview with Elon Musk. You know, he's very hot right now. Very hot.
Yes.
And
what a name.
He calls it Tesla. Tesla with a Z.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, I never call it Tesla. And he corrected a guy during the interview. The guy goes, so how long are you going to be? You got these Teslas. And he goes, it's Tesla. And I'm like, Tesla? All right. He came across as very arrogant. And you know what? I feel like if you're a billionaire, you can be that way. You can act however you want with people.
I've never met a billionaire.
Oh, you haven't, huh?
No.
That's all right.
So I don't know if they're arrogant or not.
I'm trying to think if I have.
See, I think Warren Buffett would be cool.
I've been in the same room with...
Of all the billionaires...
Yeah. Seems down to earth.
I'd say Warren Buffett would be the guy.
Well, you watched that. You watched that... I told you to watch the
I'm
Bill Gates
I'm buying Warren Buffett, yes.
I told you to watch that Bill Gates documentary on Netflix. One of the things is they sit down for lunch at a diner in Nebraska.
Right.
And he's like, well, see here. You know, it's a hamburger. I always have it the same way. Mushrooms and a ton of mustard. And then he also puts a massive amount of salt on it. This guy's 80-something.
Yeah.
Every day, burger for lunch. Anyway, I'm just saying.
You know, he eats the same thing every day, right?
Why?
It's one less thing to think about.
That's true.
So he can stay focused on the things that matter to him. I don't want choices for... give me the same thing.
Scott, are you buying Jim Harbaugh, who is one of your favorite guys, brought up a proposal for in an open letter to the NFL? To the NFL. He said that... Jim Harbaugh has this new thing. He said, with these rules, it would allow college football players to enter the NFL draft at any point during their college career and be allowed to return to school if they weren't drafted. Similar to what they're doing in basketball.
Right.
Jim Harbaugh has a lot of weird ideas. I feel like this is not one of them.
No. When you mentioned Jim Harbaugh's name, I almost said sell, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't care what idea you're going to come up with here, Alex. It's like, sell this idea.
Right.
Sell Jim Harbaugh.
It's like the joke that goes around on the internet. They're like, okay, Dad, A or B? A, you can spend the rest of your life with Mom. And then they go, or, and he goes, B. It's a little bit of that.
That's terrible.
It was a little bit. That's terrible. Awful. You
that's
can't
awful.
Do that.
Terrible.
So, but I mean, the idea is exactly.
I really like this idea.
Yeah,
I like it in the sense that you just don't. You don't know. It's so weird. The draft is so weird, and you just and the teams that they fall in love with guys, and you scratch your head, and you're like, "What are you doing, huh?" And to be able to kind of enter and get a feel for things. I'm not talking, you know, when you're done, you're done with your eligibility. But if you're a younger player, absolutely. I mean, guys get drafted into baseball, and they still make a choice of going, nah, I'm not, never mind, I'm not interested. I would be more, because it's kind of unfair to the NFL teams in the sense that they're wasting a pick on you, and then you just say no to them. That I don't think the NFL would go for that. But I think if they could evaluate the player and say, here's our speculation about where you're going to end up in the draft, and maybe up until the draft happens, they could say, yes, I'm still available, or no, I'm not. Exploring your opportunities, I like. Just absolutely going and being drafted and then just say, hey, I don't like that, I'm going back. That'll never fly. That's never going to fly. So I'm going to lukewarmly, if we could maybe modify this a little bit, I buy this idea.
Well, just think about how crazy it is. I get that football takes a lot more time on the development side than any other sport. And the place that it gets done here in this country, for football. Everything else is minor league baseball. Great. That's where the biggest development happens for baseball. Basketball, now it's like the AAU and the select teams and then right. 1 year of college, mm-hmm. right? That's yeah. their system. And with the NFL, they go, well, you got to have 3 years outside of high school. And that used to make sense because no one was ready after their right. freshman year in college. Nobody. Right. And now we're getting to the point where we are not allowing the possibility of guys to be able to create a situation for themselves that could benefit their family and them financially. Instead, they're making these decisions. You saw the report yesterday. Did you see the report yesterday that an expert was saying that if they were to have these same name, image, likeness discussions during the time of Reggie Bush, he would have made between $4 and $6 million during his time at USC.
Yeah.
And who's to say he didn't already make that when he was there?
That's that was a pay cut for him.
Right. So the question is like, why can't you allow something like that for these guys at some point in their career? Why not give an opportunity for these guys? Why would you tell any adult in this country, yeah, you have the opportunity to make millions of dollars, but it's cheating, right? That you're like, well, what is it based on? Well, your ability to play, and we're going to sell you.
Especially when the people that are telling you you're cheating are benefiting massively financially
right.
from it.
You playing.
It's very disingenuous to say yeah. to say those kind of things.
It's going to be really hard to find guys that qualify for a one and done. But what you're going to see is guys who do, and you're going to see guys who go into the draft, and they don't get drafted. And guess what? That's how they get weeded out. And then they go back to play college football again. Come on.
And I'll bet if they went back, they'd be better players. I'm just telling you, I think going back and saying, okay, didn't work out.
Why not do that interview process? Yeah. Why not go have them tell you exactly what you need to work on for your game to get better? You know what it's going to be? It's going to be, and you're exactly right, they'll go back and they'll be better for college football.
Yeah.
Or they leave college football and it becomes a situation where it becomes more competitive. The one-and-done thing is 100% based on the fact that the NCAA is not going to run these kids' lives anymore.
Yeah.
Why not? I think that needs to happen. Let me see here. Oh, do you buy Tom Brady and his relationship or lack thereof with Josh McDaniels being the reason that he left the
No,
New
I'm,
England
I'm
Patriots.
Selling this idea.
Why?
I don't think it
it's
was
just
about
needless. This is just needless I think rumors. These are just,
yeah, and look, if you play football at all, you're going to have a situation where you don't get along. You don't get along.
When they go, there was talk of friction yeah. between Brady and Belichick. Of course there was.
You could say it against anyone. I mean,
what do we learn from Jordan's
everyone.
Documentary?
Yeah,
he had tension with everyone.
With everyone. And that's how it
still
is.
Still was a winner.
It's the competitive nature of where you are. It's the fact that you have close proximity. Josh McDaniel and Tom Brady, do you know how much time they've spent together? The meetings they've been in every single day for year after year after year after year.
The plane rides, the locker room interactions.
During a game.
Hearing them in your headset.
And it being in that high tension, high pressure situation of an NFL football game. Come on. That's crazy. Yes, they absolutely.
So you're selling that. Just because that's a thing that happens anyway. All these relationships.
It was the biggest shock to me when I got to the NFL.
That people were so mean to each other?
Oh, my goodness. It was like, don't watch the field. Watch on the sideline. Much more entertaining game going on over there. Like, I couldn't. To me, it was like, I thought it was being disrespectful to the coach. You know, I'd grown up in kind of an environment, right. You know, where the coach is
king. Put your helmet on. You look forward,
right,
son.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And I was like, whoa. And it was just like, this is great. You know, this is. And then when I played, I ended up being one of those same players. You know, it was like. And it's not a personal thing. It's just the game is extremely intense. And a lot of times the people that are closest to you are the ones that kind of get the brunt of some of that tension.
Brady denies it.
Because yeah, it's so dumb. It's like, whatever.
He's like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Of course. Listen, all of these relationships that I've had with anybody in the NFL are deteriorating if I'm on your team. Because I'm mean.
Now, there's a few that are real.
Oh, for sure.
Jim Zorn's real for me. It's a real thing.
Well, I think about some of these guys who just, they absolutely can't stand these guys that they play with. But they make it work for the time that they're there.
Yeah.
There's very few times that people are sabotaging you. That's, again, we'll go back to the Jim Zorn thing another day. All right. For Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Keery. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for hanging out on another edition of KSL's Unrivaled. For Scott, I'm Alex. We'll see you tomorrow night, everybody.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.